Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man who is that twist of lime that you absolutely needed, but not necessarily asked for. He is the Captain.
It's good to be seen, and it's good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
Today we are drinking up some Blueberry Thrill from our friends at Susquehanna Brewing Company. This Radler is zesty, sweet, bright, and refreshing. ABV 4.2%, garage grade 3 3/4 bottle caps out of 5. And this week we are giving cheers to our good friends here. First up we have Catherine in Dallas, Texas.
And a big shout out to Vanessa in the party room in Parts Unknown.
Here we go, Captain. We have a shout out to Fatty Patty in Oviedo, Florida.
And a big shout out to Ashton in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Next up, we have Natalie in Portland, Maine. And last, but certainly not least, we have Aldi in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks to everyone for contributing to this week's beer fund. If you want to fill up the beer truck for next week, just go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the donate button.
And if you need more True Crime Garage,
give me more. I need some more.
Let me get through the announcements, please. Sorry. Go download the Stitcher app. It's free. You can listen to all of our old episodes. And if you download the Stitcher Premium app, you can get Off the Record, our bonus show. And that is enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. So thanks to Taylor Beal's online post, investigators knew that Taylor and Ben Foley had a past and continued to talk online and possibly even see each other. But the more troubling thing here, Captain, is Ben Foley online claims to be an ex-con, which absolutely turns out to be true.
So what did this doucheburger do?
Well, he had some charges for assault and breaking and entering, and I think it goes even beyond that. One thing that I find extra troubling here is statements we have from some of her friends that say that Taylor had gotten into this habit of parking her car on Ben Foley Street, on the street that he lived on, because there were no parking meters there for her to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm getting at here with this, Captain, is we have this situation where there seems to be some kind of friendship between the two. It looks to me like Ben Foley thinks that it is, the friendship is one thing that it is not. And then we also have the situation of he's got a violent past, a history of violence. And he also probably could know when she's coming and going because he could visually see her vehicle parked on his street.
Well, yeah, and again, the ruse of I'll take some photos for you, and we know that he's involved in these odd pornographic sites.
Well, and regardless of whatever their relationship was or their friendship, I should say friendship because relationship makes it sound like something that it was not. Regardless of what their friendship was, the thing is, her friends that knew about Foley all really say, hey, I think that she was starting to realize that Ben Foley was more screwed up than she really wanted to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it appears that they may still have been hanging out. Now, when questioned by police about this friendship with Taylor, Ben Foley said that he had no idea where she was, and he was worried about her. He said the last time he saw her was around 9:30 p.m. on that Monday night, when she left his apartment after they hooked up. Police didn't believe him. In fact, they named him as one of several persons of interest in the case on October 3rd. But the problem was Ben Folley maintained that he had an alibi. But before Taylor had even been reported missing, Ben Folley went to the police station and filed a report alleging that he had been assaulted on the street by several guys. The time frame that he cited for the attack was around 5 a.m. on September 6th. This occurred in an alley near Franklin Street and Monument Avenue. Folley alleged that he was hit with an unknown object in a bag placed over his head, and then he was thrown in a car and driven around by several men before being released on a dirt road, and he had to hitch a ride home.
Now, do we have evidence of this? Do we have the person that he hitched a ride from saying, you know, corroborating the story? Do we have any markings on his individual?
Well, so police looked carefully at this claim, trying to determine, like you said, Captain, whether this was true or not. The problem is, if it is true, then it seems very likely that Folley could not have been responsible for abducting Taylor. Folley filed this report around 4 p.m. on Tuesday. He made vague references to the attack likely being a result of a long-running altercation with an ex or another photographer over rights to some photographs, which all seems a little loosey-goosey to me.
Well, you know, those photographers, they like to...
They're a bad bunch.
They have a gang of people, and they're going to abduct you and place a bag over your head and hit you with objects.
The police officer whose name appears on the incident report did note that Folley admitted that he was extremely intoxicated when the alleged attack took place. He also said that he took medication for bipolar disorder. Now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and let's dive into that real quick, because most of the medication that you would be on for bipolar are not things that you would, one, want to drink on, but they could also cause you death if you do drink on those medications.
Again, though, you are a level-headed individual who makes good decisions. We once again find ourselves discussing a guy who does not make good decisions.
I would be taking this report as the officer, and when it would say officer's name, I'd put Silly Goose.
So the thing that I have trouble with here, I don't know really why this would be considered any type of alibi, because Folley says that he last saw Taylor, if we are to believe him, at 9:30 p.m., and then maintained that the attack happened at 5 a.m.
Right.
Hours later. Seems to me like you had plenty of time to abduct or kill or do whatever during that time frame.
Well, and we have footage of her leaving her dorm, but they're going to find footage of him outside her dorm room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but again, he's not denying that they hung out that night.
Well, and the thing is, I think what we have here is really kind of a front, a bit of a tactic by police. We saw how smart they were with the vehicle situation,
yeah,
right?
Surveillance of the vehicle, yeah.
I think they thought, hey, this Ben Folley, he's pretty dumb. He's pretty stupid. We had a meeting, all right? All of us investigators and police officers, we got together and we took a vote and we decided this guy's a real idiot.
So here's how the meeting went. Hey, raise your hand if you think this guy's a dumbass. And
there's like 19 hands went up, yeah. And then one guy was just kind of sitting there playing on his phone. He wasn't paying attention.
No, one guy was like, but I really like his van.
Right. You know, I saw it on the news.
It's pretty cool.
So I think they all kind of agree this guy's an idiot, and they're like, publicly, let's go out and say, hey, We understand he's somebody that we're interested in. We understand that there was some kind of friendship going on, but we have to figure this whole he was allegedly attacked situation out. We have to figure out if he actually has an alibi or not. Make him think that you're kind of falling for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And see if he does something dumb, because this guy has nothing but a history of 30 some years of doing dumb things. So he may give you whatever you need. He may give you that smoking gun so you can figure out what he has actually been up to. Because even though we have them on record saying that, I don't believe that they were falling for anything that he was saying. And I also, like you said, where's the evidence of this? Where's the person that gave you the ride home?
Yeah, I'm trying to see where you're going with this, because in my timeline, I know what cops do next, but I'm wondering if I'm missing something.
Well, I really think that it was just to me, it looks just like a front that they were putting on at the time. I think behind closed doors, they didn't think anything of this alleged attack other than it was a false alibi, that it was something that he created to explain away a big window of time that he needs to be accounted for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems like our thoughts about their investigation, Captain, are correct. I mean, they seem to be suspicious of Folley, and this did not come out until later. But what we do know took place is that police did review that security camera surveillance footage from Taylor's dorm on the last night that she was seen. And as said, she is seen entering the building around 10:20 p.m. She walks through the lobby to the doors on the right-hand side of the frame, presumably to head up to her room. But someone else then enters the lobby at 10:21 and paces around for a few minutes, clearly waiting for someone. And who is this person? Dun-da-da-da, Ben Folley.
Boner sniffer.
So his statement of, hey, I last saw her in the 9 o'clock hour, can't be true. You followed her in. We have video surveillance footage of you following her into the lobby of her residence at 10:20 in the 10 o'clock hour.
Right. And then she's going to come back out to hang out with them. So again, we know he's lying about the time frame or just misremembering, but it's almost like he knew that he was caught on tape. So he has to admit that he was hanging out with her that night. I don't understand this whole, I was attacked, and that's setting up an alibi, but the time frame would be early morning hours and not around that 10 p.m. to 12 p.m. window. But I think where he really messed up is when he was telling the cops, well, Anna, we hooked up that night. Now, we have her friend saying, yes, they were intimate before, but she didn't want to do that again. That's not to say that she wouldn't have been intimate with him again. I mean, we have proof that she was intimate with him before. So I would actually argue that that would mean there was more of a possibility just because she told her friends that she didn't want to do it again. But that leads to police to go, well, she's 17. And this is going to be enough for us to get a search warrant to search his apartment.
Well, you are exactly right, because what's going on here, I believe, reading between the lines, I think that police had an idea that Folley was with her at a time that he did not give to them. I think they knew that for a while. I think they are trying to figure out what else was he involved in. And I also think that just because they didn't ask him about that 10 o'clock hour, he may be unaware of the security camera footage that he was seen on camera. They were seen on camera together at 10:24, and then they both leave. Now, their joint departure is not actually caught on camera, but neither of them are seen on camera again, so we can assume that they left together.
Well, here's why I'm saying not maybe the footage that the cops actually had. But here's this guy that's been around campus long enough to know the campus is heavily secure. There's tons of security cameras everywhere. So knowing that you met her on campus, you could just assume that at some point they have you on video footage.
Right. And maybe the 9:30 thing is his way of trying to explain that away.
Right. But also by just saying, knowing that you met her on campus, this is why you have to tell the police, well, I was with her that night for a little bit. We hooked up and then she left and I don't know what happened to her.
So the security surveillance footage plus the fact that he willingly tells police we hooked up, she's underage, This is enough to allow officers to obtain a search warrant for Ben Folley's apartment, which was located at 407 Hancock Street. On September 16th, they went in and searched this apartment. Mm-hmm. And the search warrant must have included, you know, you have to specifically state what you are seeking in this warrant. It must have included electronic devices, because we know that police left carrying some computers after this first search. And what they found on those computers led to the arrest of Ben Folley on September 23rd. Captain, would you like to do the honors and inform us as to what was found on these computers?
Well, what's interesting is I don't think it's just on the computers. I think maybe also on disk and things like that. There was a lot of child pornography. He tries to explain that away by saying, well, some of this was left by the tenant before me. I didn't even know it was there. But that couldn't explain away the child pornography that was actually found on the hard drives. And that he had multiple computers with extremely large amounts of hard drive space. I mean, especially for that time, 2005.
That's right. There wasn't really anything on the computers linking Folley directly to Taylor's disappearance, although there were those pictures of her that we discussed that he took.
Hundreds of pictures of her, yeah. And hundreds of pictures.
Of images of child pornography.
Well, and not just
what's
that.
What's described but, in the media release.
Yeah, I mean, not just that, but also just tons of very... I don't know what the correct term would be, but you have pornography and then you have this more like this demonic pornography.
Okay, so this next bit's going to, the next 90 seconds might get a little difficult to listen to, but here's what I have in my notes. Okay, so police said they discovered a massive, quote, a massive amount of extremely graphic child pornography featuring children as young as 3 and 4 years old being raped. By some reports, as many as 7 computers loaded with pornography were confiscated from the apartment. According to the Richmond Times-Dispatch, Senior Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney Mike Jaggles later told Judge Kimberly O'Donnell that there were as many as 30 movie files discovered on computers that were removed from Folley's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Some depicting acts with minors as young as 1. This is tough to even read. Minors as young as 1 or 2 years old, and others featuring individuals 10 to 14 years old. Folley, of course, maintained that the computers were not his, as you pointed out. He says they belong to a former resident of the apartment. No one was buying this load of crap that he was trying to shovel.
Right, but this is just proves how this guy's story changes constantly. He's always has some excuse for things. And so that's when you really know that most likely whatever happened to her was at the hands of this individual.
So like we said, this results in his arrest. It also results in a second, more comprehensive search of his apartment.
Well, but here's what's great. We can put him in jail for these charges. And then, because of these charges, we can go back and look for more evidence.
We can build our case and know exactly where he is and hold him. And he can't do anything to get rid of evidence in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that they were looking for in the second search... Many of the items that were listed on the search warrant included things that would belong to Taylor. You know, her clothing, her jeans, a black hoodie, sneakers, black watch, bracelets, St. Francis necklace, student ID, Nokia cell phone, and car keys. All of that's listed on the warrant. Also listed were skateboards. Sometimes you want to put a generic term out there so you can take any skateboard that you find.
Mm-hmm.
Burglary tools. This would probably go back to his previous convictions.
Mm-hmm.
They were also looking for knives, hammers, shovels, and pry bars. And I found this to be strange. There's always something strange listed on these search warrants. On here, we have the ever suspicious Pepperidge Farm cookie boxes.
What?
Yeah. I couldn't figure out. I have no idea why this would be on the warrant.
The cops were hungry.
I don't know if they had reason to believe that she would have had one of these cookie boxes in her possession at the time that she went missing. And maybe that then they can go, okay, is it might be a coincidence, but it also might be a sign that she was here
right
later that night. I don't have a complete list of what was found in the apartment, but here's what we do know was taken out of the house pursuant to the search warrants. Women's white underwear, a laptop computer, a Macintosh computer, a digital camera, sex toys including two dildos and spiked bracelets, a knife, two bags of clothes from a garbage can outside of the house, a beaded necklace with a cross from, this was removed from the garbage as well, a bicycle chain necklace, a watch from the garbage can, a 35 millimeter camera, a box containing bones. He collected weird things like that.
Yeah, but, which everybody has a right to have weird shit.
Oh, but. Yeah, yeah. We all probably own some weird shit. Rolls of film.
I mean, we probably don't have a bunch of dildos laying around.
A black bra, a machete, cigarette butts, a prescription bottle, skateboards. They did find skateboards. A yearbook, a hatchet, a hammer, a pry bar, a 32 caliber cartridge, and a partridge in a pear tree. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. The one thing that was rather interesting of note here, Captain, police also removed a section from a box spring that was stained with some kind of reddish brown substance. They did include and executed a warrant for Folly's hair and DNA samples. Not found were Taylor's cell phone that they were looking for, her college ID, her car keys. Again, anything linking Folly, Ben Folly, directly to Taylor's disappearance does not seem to have been found. Just on the child porn possession alone, police had enough to charge Folly with a felony. And as you said, hold him while they continue to build a case against him regarding Taylor's disappearance. And they also charged him with a possession of a firearm, because remember, he's a convicted felon. He's not legally permitted to be in possession of a gun.
But their investigation takes a pretty interesting turn as far as, because you collected all of this stuff, but where do you go from that? I mean, that none of this, other than the child pornography, can you charge him with? Or like you said, the gun possession charge, so you can add that on top of things, but.
Well, they're going to go to the public for help, okay? Because on October 11th, police announced that they were specifically interested in the sightings of the following items between the dates of September 5th and September 17th. They want to know, had anybody seen a white Ford Escort? That's, remember, that's the vehicle. Mm-hmm. Virginia license plate, JPC 2848, and they asked the public to call in sightings of the vehicle and a description of whomever may have been driving the vehicle at the time. They wanted to know who had been driving Taylor's car around Richmond during that time that they can't figure out where it was. They also wanted people to report any sightings of Virginia personalized license plates, GRN ERTH. This was a plate stolen from a vehicle around the time Taylor disappeared, and police believed it might have been in Folly's possession. And they also sought information about that Ohio state license plate as well.
Right.
So what's interesting to me is, while they need the public's help, it seems like they have a general idea of what was going on at the time. He abducted, he did something to Taylor and was moving her vehicle around during the time that it was unaccounted for. And he may have been switching out the plates multiple times along the way.
Right. Because you know this girl's missing, you see what kind of car she has. How many people saw that car, looked at the license plates, and went, well, that's not her car?
Yeah, yeah. It also came out around the same time the media reported that Folley used his credit card to buy gas in New Kent County between Matthews County and Richmond on the night that Taylor disappeared. So this really kind of, to me, would suggest that his later claim that he was attacked, there doesn't seem to be any time left for that to actually have taken place. It's the old Jussie Smollett jumped farce we got going on there. Yeah. Meanwhile, Taylor's family lawyer cleaned out Taylor's dorm room, taking all of her possessions back to her hometown of Vienna. And they stated, Taylor's family basically stated, even if she is found alive, she's not going to be returning to VCU at this time. Right. There's too much going on here. And
because at this point, you have to believe that she's abducted. And so if you do find her alive, there's no way that you're going to want, as her parents, for her to be around that vicinity to have any of those bad memories.
Well, and things are looking very, very bleak by this time. And now they're really honing in on Folley, and he's locked up, and they want to start going through his social circles now. We're going to publicly ask the public for help, but we're going to get into his social circles and ask these people for help. And one of the people that they come across is this young woman named Erin, who was also a VCU student and somewhat of a friend or acquaintance of Taylor's.
And oddly kind of looks like she could be related to Taylor. Definitely looks like Taylor's mother. Like there's a lot of similarities there.
And she's a little older than Taylor. She's 23 at the time. Apparently, she dated Ben Folley for some time. I guess they only dated for a couple of months before Erin broke up with him.
Well, and she probably didn't want to come forward because it was such an embarrassment that she dated this douche in the first place.
Well, I think she was the one that the charges, some of his previous convictions stem from. So,
well, he had a history of meeting
crazy after these girls after a while.
Well, yeah, but oddly he would start dating them, and because, oh, let me take pictures of you, you're so beautiful, and he would make these girls feel like they're the best thing in the world. But then that became, oh, well, now I'm jealous of everybody else, and I just love you so much that I'm jealous of everybody else. And then become aggressive, almost like self-sabotaging the relationship. Like,
well, and here's the thing too, Captain. What we got going on now, we've seen a lot of these types of cases. Anytime detectives think that we have somebody who needs to hide something that they never, ever want anyone to find, they start asking the people that know them best, okay, is there anywhere that he liked to camp? Or go fishing, or go hunting, you know, outdoor activities. What does he do and where does he go? So they start talking to Erin. They start showing her picture after picture from his photography webpage because they need her to identify some of these locations. Yeah, here's a picture. Tell us where you think this area is.
Yeah, he would take pictures of girls and things like that, but he would also take pictures of, like, old rundown sheds and, you know, just fields and random items and locations.
So one photo that caught her eye, you know, she's looking at photo after photo. Finally, she sees one and she's like, holy moly, this might be something here. This is a photo of an old abandoned house with like a tin lean-to attached to it. The house was oddly enough located on her family farm, which was about 90 miles away from Richmond in Matthews County.
Right, and I think she took him there at some point. Maybe they even shot those photos together.
Well, and remember we talked about Folley purchasing gas with his credit card out that night. Now all of a sudden this photo of an old abandoned house 90 miles away out in the middle of nowhere seems very important.
For all of our sakes, we need to avoid crowds any way we can right now. But what if you need to go to the post office? What if you need postage to send out letters and packages? Don't worry, Stamps.com is here to help. With Stamps.com, you can print postage on demand and skip those lines and crowds at the post office. You personally print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, for anywhere. Then just leave it for your mail carrier, schedule a free package pickup, or drop it in a mailbox. No human contact required. Whether you're a small business sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or you're just working from home and need to mail stuff, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. With Stamps.com, you get great discounts too. 5 cents off every first class stamp and up to 62% off USPS shipping rates. And now Stamps.com also offers UPS services with discounts up to 62%. You won't even have to pay UPS residential surcharges. Right now, our listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and digital scale without any long-term commitments. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Garage. That's Stamps.com and enter promo code Garage. Stay safe, my friends. Brook Linen. Everything you need to live your most comfortable life. You spend 1/3 of your life in sheets. Don't you want them to be insanely comfortable? So put comfort first. Like with new bedding, loungewear, towels, and more. Brook Linen has it all. Home of the internet's favorite sheets, Brook Linen's got over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. And starting this weekend, Brook Linen's kicking off summer with an event you'll want to get comfortable with. Get everything from bedding to towels to loungewear and more at savings you won't believe. My house is comfortable because of Brook Linen. I wake up in the morning on the best sheets I have ever owned. They were so nice that I end up buying a Brook Linen comforter. And then when I mosey on into the bathroom, what awaits me? Towels. The sheets were amazing. The comforter was amazing. Who would think that the towels wouldn't be amazing? They're so amazing. They're a game changer. Like softness, comfort, essentials to help you relax, Brook Linen has it all. BrookLinen.com is the perfect place to find all the comforts for home. They're so confident in their products that all their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Their Memorial Day event kicks off this weekend, and you don't want to miss it. Ease your way into summer with big savings on sheets, bedding, towels, loungewear, and their newest hammam and linen collections. And if you can't wait, you can get 10% off your first order and free shipping on all the new sheets right now when you use promo code GARAGE at BrookLinen.com. That's BrookLinen.com. Brook Linen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. All right, we're back. Cheers, mates. Thank you so much for donating to the beer fund. I am sipping on some nice brew because of you.
Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for telling a friend about our little garage show, too.
And thanks for telling your friends not to listen, too.
And thank you to you, Captain.
And thank you to our friends that listen.
All right, we might have had a few too many.
Yeah.
I love you, man. On October 5th.
Sober up.
Right. On October 5th, police headed out to the site where that photo was taken. This accompanied by Aaron.
It's a creepy photo.
Yeah. And they're going to be searching this whole area. And before too long, they identified a body and a plastic bag in a ditch off the side of a wooded road. The remains were very decomposed, but were wearing clothing that was similar to what Taylor was wearing when she disappeared. Sure enough, the medical examiner soon identified the remains as Taylor Beal based on dental records.
Well, and think about this girl that's helping out the police. She goes out to her family's property. She doesn't know what she's going to find. They find Taylor. She then has to think about the relationship she had with this person and how that possibly could have been her. that would be a very traumatic experience.
There are several theories as to why this area may have been chosen for the dump site. You know, they seem a little odd. Who knows what was going on in the mind of the person who placed her there? So there's one theory that I do find this interesting. I don't think it has anything really to do with the case, but there's a thought that maybe Ben Folley thought if he put her on Aaron's family's property, that maybe it would get confusing to investigators and Aaron could somehow be involved in Taylor's disappearance.
Possibly. We know he lies about everything.
I think what likely happened is this is just, unfortunately, maybe a place that popped into his mind when he thought of, like we said earlier, hey, I got something I don't want anybody to ever find. And he thought this was a good place to put it.
Well, they're going to go back with this information. This is basically now the cops have a loaded gun that they can point at him. And he's going to start confessing to what he claims happened that night.
Yeah. And one thing that they will be equipped with when they go in to talk with Folley is they took some soil samples from the undercarriage of Taylor's vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to match those two soil samples taken from the area where the body was found. So they are able to piece a lot of this together before they even talk to him. They know where she was found. They have a general idea of what happened to her, being that she was either abducted or killed and then transported in her own vehicle out to that location. And then we know the vehicle came back to the VCU campus area and was placed there. Now, Taylor died in a manner that did not leave visible marks on her body. So they were unable to determine the exact cause of death. There was no broken bones or obvious signs of death. Now, mind you, she rather decomposed at this time. Folley continued to deny that he had anything to do with this, but that's not going to last very long, Captain, just like you pointed out, because he will offer up some kind of confession. Well, of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And this was against the recommendation of his attorney. Folley told investigators that on the night of September 5th, he and Taylor had driven out to a beach in the Matthews County area to hook up. He said he was very drunk and high at the time and was off his meds. The two engaged in what he called rough sex, and he said Taylor accidentally died. According to him, the two had played a sex game, and it was all Taylor's idea. She wanted to try erotic asphyxiation, but it backfired. And when she died, he panicked and dumped her body in that ravine. Although he tried to spin this off as some type of accident, Folley himself may have made mention of what he planned to do to Taylor. In one journal entry by Skulls 67, in a journal subtitled Playing with Fire, The Trash of a Crazy Ex-Con, he wrote about his sexual conquest with partners referred to by their initials like K and E. He also talked about someone with the initials T and said that there was something he, quote, still wanted to try with her.
Mm-hmm.
This was before Taylor died. Taylor's mother was quick to dispute Folley's version of the events, of course. She says, let's be clear, Ben Folley murdered my daughter. She said in a news conference, his claim that it was accidental is just one more perversion of the truth and his ever-changing web of lies.
Yeah, he claims that they went out to this location, they're trying to hook up, they're in the backseat of the car, that he was drunk and high and off his medication, all that stuff. They were trying to put a bag over her head during sex. That wasn't really working because she wanted to pass out. This is what he's claiming. And so then he took the bag off her head, but then put it around her nose and mouth. Now, once she stopped breathing, here's a strange thing. Is during his confession, he doesn't dump the body that night. He doesn't just go, oh, I got to get rid of her and take the car back. he claims that he comes back to VCU with her body in the back seat. And that the car is parked there for a day or so, and then he drives back out to that same location and then dumps her there. But again, this guy will lie about everything.
Yeah, and as you pointed out earlier, his story changes when it needs to. You know, he has an excuse, he has a story, he has an alibi, until, boom, you present him with facts, with truthful evidence and facts that you know to be true, and then he says, well, here's a different story for you.
Well, but here's the thing, though, is he already has more and more charges that are mounting against him.
Yeah, and what's difficult, though, for the prosecution and for the state, Captain, is that we do have this, while it does not seem likely, it is a plausible defense of this was an accident and maybe he shouldn't be charged with murder. We also have the problem that we really have very little forensic evidence in this case at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take a good amount of time. In fact, it was not until January 17th of 2006 that a grand jury handed down an indictment of Folley. This was for first degree murder.
God, I would have loved to try this case.
Once the grand jury was told and it was explained that the medical examiner could not have identified an exact cause of death because of the decomposition, then we have an indictment that was amended to second degree murder. The death penalty obviously going to be off the table at this point. Now, despite holes in their case, prosecutors went full steam ahead preparing for a trial, working with investigators, trying to build a circumstantial case to prove that Taylor was not the initiator of this so-called sex game.
Mm-hmm.
That she was not into bondage or erotic asphyxiation or really that she would not have consented to any of this crap, and that Folley killed her and probably deliberately killed her. It was not an accident by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, and his defense team is saying, well, she wanted to try this because he had tons of pornography on his computer and showed her some different things. And she was like, oh, I'd like to try that.
Yeah. That's what he claims.
But it doesn't matter. I mean, the idea that anybody, female or male, would be on trial for wanting to try something sexually, that's her right to. That doesn't equal being murdered.
Right.
You know, so it doesn't matter how you slice it. It doesn't matter if it was his idea or her idea. That should never equal murder.
So what we have here, Captain, is in August of 2006, the murder trial is about to begin.
Mm-hmm.
But what we get, and I so love this. We get a gift for the prosecution because Folley opens up his big fat mouth. That's right. Folley made the mistake of talking, and his defense attorneys got wind of this. In a jailhouse conversation with an officer, Folley described
Hold on. You set it up a little bit better, because he is coming back to his cell after this. Like, there was a meeting,
mm-hmm.
and basically this web of lies that he's been casting, he claims that it's the ultimate chess move.
Right. He says he's playing a chess game, and really the story that he came up about Taylor's accidental death was really just that, just a story designed to clear him, to take the heat off of him, explain away what happened, but it's not what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a little bit more.
But Ben Folley. Okay, because you know this better than me. This is the part that's kind of confusing me. Because he makes that admission to this officer, and then the officer lets the defense team know. Now they can't represent that idea because they know it's a lie. Is that right?
No, I think the thought here is we have people that are going to testify that he was lying about this story.
Right.
Okay. And then we have this weird thing where he's writing letters from jail to a female friend. the prosecution gets a hold of these letters. They did not help Folley's case. I don't know exactly what was in these letters, but these were mentioned during this portion of the story.
Right.
And what this leads to is by August 9th, we have Folley consulting with his attorneys, and they decide that Folley should take an Alford plea for second-degree murder in exchange for prosecutors dropping the child pornography charges. Out at the plea proceedings, prosecutors and defense attorneys were able to present their cases to the judge, whose job it is then to determine whether there was enough evidence to warrant Folley taking such a plea. The confession, his tapes of his confession or so-called confession, were played in court, and later transcripts were released to the media. More details about this confession came out, and you went through quite a bit of that when you were telling us about what happened. One thing I found weird was it cites that Taylor wanted to play a game that she called Drunk Monkey.
I don't know.
And again, it seems a little silly to go through this confession when we know so much of it is just completely false. And we can say that based off of his plea, off of his later plea, where he accepts that he's going to be convicted of this.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I have some questions, but I don't think it matters. Like, was she alive when they went out to this location? I don't know. Did he actually bring the body back? Did he bring Taylor back? I don't know. You know, I don't think it matters. I think at the end of the day, no matter what he states, everything else, again, he can still say, he's still saying in prison, I'm not the cause of her death. She wanted to try something and it was an accident. Well, we know that you told people, hey, I'm a genius. I came up with this excuse. But everything else points to murder.
Right.
This happens. She blacks out. She stops breathing. You don't call 911. You then claim that you transport her body back to campus. Not telling anybody. That equals murder. You then change license plates multiple times on that car. That equals murder. You then lie to the cops about what happened. That equals murder. You then lie to everybody and tell her family, almost in a braggadocious way, well, we hooked up that night. No, you didn't. You probably raped her. That equals murder. You then constantly lie about everything. And all these twists and turns and take not only the police, but the family members of your victim on this wild ride. All that stuff equals murder. And then you put her out in the middle of nowhere. And this is what her mom says. For her body to be eaten by animals and bugs and insects. Because you don't have respect for human life. You don't have respect for this young lady. This was not your friend. Because all that stuff equals murder.
Well, and unfortunately, it seems like for Ben Folley, well, for those around him anyway, that he was ramping up to something like this probably for quite some time. Now, I don't have all those letters that he wrote to his friend while he's in jail, but...
Wait, hold on for a second. Ladies, get better friends. Who's the person communicating with this fuck, you know?
Well, we do have a portion of one of those letters, and this is going to be what really is going to seal the deal here. And they read this aloud in the plea proceedings. I believe that all of these letters were read, but the one that made its way to the media is this. And this is directly from Folley's written letter to his friend. He says, quote, people don't like me. They never do. As a child, I had no friends. I was a bother, in the way, a problem. So I spent most of my life alone. I never like the thoughts in my head. People are right. Something is wrong with me. All the thoughts of killing and death in my head, and now it's true. I've killed someone. These are his own words. At the conclusion of the Alford plea hearing, Judge William Shaw III found that there was substantial evidence that Folley was guilty of murdering Taylor Beale. He sentenced Folley to 40 years with 10 years suspended. Folley would serve 30 years. Taylor Beale's case is famous because it is one of the first to be solved using the victim's social media. Police were able to narrow down the suspect list very quickly because of her postings online. Taylor's funeral was held the day after her 18th birthday. Benjamin Folley is scheduled to be released on November 14th, 2031.
That's just too soon.
Janet, Taylor's mother, has published a book called Love You More, The Taylor Beale Story, and has become an outspoken advocate for victims. Taylor's friend, Aaron Crable, received a $20,000 reward for her assistance in locating Taylor. With some of the reward money, she established a fund for women in crisis in honor of Taylor Beale.
All right, thanks for joining us here in the garage. Nick, do we have any recommended reading?
Yes, we do, my fine captain. This week we are recommending Without a Prayer by Susan Ashlin. This is Without a Prayer, The Death of Lucas Leonard and How One Church Became a Cult. You'll want to pick up this book because this is a very tragic and weird case. And if you pick up Without a Prayer, you're going to find out the how, but also the why. And you don't have to write that title down right now. No, you can just go to truecrimegarage.com and click on the recommended page, and we will have that title, amongst others, right there for you.
And make sure you sign up on our mailing list while you're at the website, truecrimegarage.com. And until next week,
why don't you be good, be kind, and please don't litter.